and let me do a song. It's a love-hate relationship with the mute button. I would prefer to be totally unmuted and just let us all talk. And sometimes with a really small group, I can do that. And yet I'm just really committed that everybody has a good experience. And so that way nobody has to hear screaming kids or barking dogs, et cetera. So welcome back. Welcome back. This is The Truth About Sales. This is week number 4. And we're just getting warmed up. We're just getting into motion. So what do we do the first week? We did some admin. We did some setup. We did a self-evaluation critique exercise to see if anybody has spinach in their teeth that they're not aware of. And just did a little self-critique. See what's going on for you. Then we did a little rapport exercise. In week 2, we took on doing values elicitation. Right, before we start making decisions and putting things in front of our clients, let's find out what are their values. Let's make sure that we're delivering inside their values. We also did, on week number 2, we also did their decision-making criteria. As we find out how the client makes decisions, it's much, much easier to deliver inside their filter. And then last week, we worked on, what did we do last week? God, now I'm drawing a blank. Oh, we did frames.
Audio, visual, and...
Yeah, we did VAK. That's right. We did VAK style. And then we did the level shift, which is reframing their answer in a way that keeps us in agreement, right? So we're still just kind of laying the groundwork before we really get the big artillery out. So that's where we've been so far. So let's do a little check-in. What do you think so far? What have you gotten out of this so far? How have the exercises been? How do you like playing the rapport game? How do you like practicing these tools in the world? What payoffs have you gotten so far? What questions do you have? So *6 will unmute you on your phone and pull you into the queue. Questions, comments, ahas, anything while you're here. Let's do our best to get us all connected before we do new stuff. So thoughts, questions, anything while you're here.
Joel, this is Douglas.
Hey, Douglas.
Yeah, well, it's been really into my guts about only because I'm catching other people doing it that I think I listen really well, but I really don't.
Awesome.
You know, and awesome. I like to act like I do, but I really don't. I'm in a hurry. And what happened the other day is this guy tried to sell me. He called me up to sell me, and we're meeting tomorrow at 11 o'clock because he wants to sell me on he's a Keller Williams agent. And the funny thing is he spent a half hour selling himself to me and setting an appointment. And then I said, well, is there anything you want? And all the time he was selling me, he was saying, I'm only going to pick one agent from this area, and only one's going to have this opportunity to have this information and this kind of possibility. And only one's going to have this. And I said, is there anything you want to know about me? And he goes, oh, no, we can talk about you when we meet. In other words, how did you possibly pick me if you don't even want to know anything about me?
Exactly.
And then I realized, oh, my God, that's me.
So did you have this? So first of all, that's a brilliant, brilliant aha to have. Holy crap, I'm not listening to people. In fact, that's maybe the biggest aha you could have. Holy smokes, I'm talking and not listening. So Doug, did you get this aha from having somebody model it the wrong way for you? Did you get some of this aha from doing the 360 review? Where did this come from for you?
Well, I started to notice when somebody was reaching out to help me, I would interrupt them.
Mm.
And I'd interrupt them with about, here's why I'm so good, rather than stop it. They're trying to help you. That's the biggest compliment you could possibly get. Shut up and listen.
Yeah.
You know, and then repeat it back. And the conversation could have been 80% faster if I would have just shut up and listened.
Bravo. So the, one of the points that I like to make over and over again is the client will every time, well, virtually every time, pretty much every time, the client will literally give you the solution. The question is, did you hear it? I had somebody that was in this class, I don't know, several months ago. And the guy trained with me 5 years ago or so, and he came back and took the class again earlier this year, or the end of last year maybe. And he said, hey, I have a question. I keep having this one problem. Would you listen to this call for me? And I go, sure. And he sent me a recording of him doing lead generation calls. And he sent me a call that was about 5 minutes long. And at the end of the call, the client was really upset, and he couldn't calm down the client, and the guy hung up on him. And he's like, what's going on here? Like, I'm saying all the right stuff. Why am I not getting these sales? So I listened to the call, and Doug's example is exactly what the guy did. He talked and talked and talked and talked, and let me tell you, let me explain, let me convince you. And at no point did he ask the client any questions. And every time the client spoke, he didn't hear the answer. He didn't have any sort of response that indicated that he heard what the guy had to say. And so he might as well have been a recording, because it wasn't a dialogue. It was a monologue. So for anybody that speaks Spanish, the word conversation, what does con mean, C-O-N? What does con mean in Spanish? Con means with. With. Conversation means with. Talk with somebody. And so, yeah, listening is key. That's awesome, Doug. That's awesome. So, Doug, what are you going to do about that? How can you train yourself starting now to listen, to not interrupt? How do you do that?
Well, before I got on the call today, Jimmy and I worked for about 15 minutes, and it was incredible because we were doing the exercises.
Nice.
And we were saying them back and forth to each other. So that's what I'm going to do that every day, because it's that important. Because I just made a huge shift from just, you know, Jimmy and I forcing each other to get out of our heads and get in between the ears of the person we're listening to and being with.
Awesome.
And it was incredible. So that's one thing I'm going to do. The second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to slow down, and before I jump into my pattern, I'm going to take a breath and just say to myself, okay, do the work. Stick to the frame and do the work.
Nice.
And
well,
just,
Doug, you're going to love what you brought up today. I think is really a perfect lead in to what we're doing today. So what we're doing today, hopefully, is going to set up a pattern that literally causes you to have to wait for the client's response. Right, so hopefully this will be yet another good habit for you to build on. And so everybody does what Douglas does. Everybody. When we get excited, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Let me tell you. Wait, I got to tell you. Wait, you got to hear about how amazing this is. When we get excited, we start to blah, 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 blah without listening. Right. It changes everything. Right on, Douglas. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. Anybody else? Got a win, a breakthrough, a question, anything at all? Anything before we jump into some new stuff? No? No ahas? No breakthroughs? No nothing yet? All right. Let me say something briefly about our habits. So pro athletes are pro because they have good habits. Olympians are Olympians because they have good habits. So I just I recommend that you help yourself set up good habits. Don't rest on your willpower. So what for this class, what would good habits really be? Well, I think the most powerful thing that you could do is right now, if you haven't already, right now in your schedule, time block about 15 or 20 minutes every day, preferably in the morning, to practice whatever the technique of the week is. So remember, there's no magic bullet. There's no, you know, no bulletproof script that's going to work everywhere. There's just habits. So each week you're getting some new tools, and as those tools become habits, your habits become reflexes in conversations. So time block 15, 20 minutes a day, practice the tools that we do every week. By the end of this course, you'll have a whole bunch of new habits in place and you won't have to think about it. You can just listen and be present with people, and your habits will carry you. So time block those, and hopefully that'll open a bunch of doors for you. What else? Last week we did VAK, we did level shifting. One more time, any thoughts, any questions about level shifting, about VAK, about identifying somebody's VAK style? By the way, did you identify, as you were speaking to people this week, were you able to say, oh, wow, this person's really visual. Oh, wow, this one's really auditory. Wow, I met a really kinesthetic person today. Check this out. Were you able to identify those? Anybody?
Yeah, Joel, I was able to do it at times. And what I found was the people that are more like me got in sync with me way faster than the people that weren't like me, which takes me back to that thing about not listening.
Yeah. So say that again, Douglas. The people, I'm going to say it for you, the people who are just like, were the same as me, we got in rapport really quickly, automatically. The people who weren't the same as me, we didn't fall into rapport naturally. Right? That's very organic. That's the way it works. So how do you fall into rapport quickly with the people that aren't like you? Easy. Give up. Give up the hallucination that your way is the right way, that your way is the only way. The client's really visual? Good. Be visual with them. It's okay. Great aha, Doug. Again, great. Great, great, great. Anybody else? Anybody notice any of those this week? All right. I hope some of those habits ingrained in you, because we're moving on to some new stuff. If you didn't do those exercises last week, do them this week. Get caught up as quick as you can. And every week we learn another layer, another layer, another layer. So please, 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 pretty please, stay current. You get a week or two behind in this class, all of a sudden it gets really challenging. So we're going to move today, we're going to move into a little bit more rapport and a little bit more agreement. So our topic today, really our focus today, excuse me, is agreement. In my world, a sale is an agreement. You have something to sell. They want to buy, you want to sell, you want to sell, they want to buy, whatever. You have an agreement on the product. You have an agreement on the service. You have an agreement on the price, on the terms. We have these agreements in place. When everybody agrees, we shake hands, we sign a contract, we transfer money, we consummate the sale. That's an agreement. A disagreement is, well, that's not what I want. That's not going to work for me. That's a disagreement. So what I really want in the conversation, in the sales conversation, what I really want is I want as much agreement as I can generate. And in no small way, rapport itself is agreement. And agreement is rapport. Consider if somebody talks really, really fast and you talk really slowly, you're disagreeing with their style, with their structure. Yet if they talk really, really fast and you talk really, really fast with them, you're agreeing with that this is an okay way to talk. which authenticates them. I want to have as much agreement as possible. All right. I'm going to read a paragraph. I'm going to read two sentences out of your handout. And it says, the human ego likes to look good and to be right. Just knowing that this is the innate thing for all of us. This is an innate ability, an innate trait for human beings, all born with an ego, all of us, including you, including me, including your clients. That means that this behavior to look good and be right is always present. It's the way human beings operate. And so many conversations turn into contests to see who's right. Lots of one-upsmanship, maybe attempts to look good, to be cool, to get acceptance, whatever. Here's the problem, though. Even if you're right, and in the case of sales, business, pricing real estate, whatever it is, you're the pro, you did your homework, you probably are right. Even, however, if you prove yourself right, we are unconsciously making the other person wrong. Right, here is the problem with the right-wrong dichotomy. Even if you prove you're right, that means the other person's wrong, you could be right and still lose the client. You could be right and still lose the sale. So what do we do about that? Well, it takes a little practice, maybe a little bit of compassion, humility, maybe. Instead of unconsciously operating from this place of, I'm right, this is common in salespeople too. We think, I'm the pro, they hired me because I'm the expert, they want me to come in here and tell them all these truths. When we operate from this place of being right all the time and unconsciously making other people wrong, other people just kind of don't want to be around you, even if you are right. The question is, what would happen to your world if everybody around you, everybody who bumped up against you in life, would always feel good and feel validated around you? Do you think that you would become more attractive? Would you become more magnetic? Would people want to be in your space? People would be fighting to be in your space because it feels amazing to be around you. So what do we do? Instead of letting your ego run the show and being right all the time, consider as a possibility giving this to your clients as a gift. Meaning, focus on making your client right. Focus on making them look good. How do we do that? Well, we do it through a couple of tools. In your handout, we have two things we're going to do today. The first one's called a tie-down question, and the second one is called a pace. They're about two pages apart. I'm going to do those backwards. We're going to do the pace first and then the tie-down. First, though, I want to consider these questions to ponder. The first question for you to ponder is, how do you feel when somebody agrees with you? How do you feel about them? How do you feel about yourself? How do you feel when somebody disagrees with you? What happens to you? Do you get all defensive? Well, do you start protecting yourself? Or do you say, oh, that's an interesting viewpoint. Tell me more about that. Maybe I'm about to get enlightened here. So what happens to you when you're in agreement or in disagreement? How do you manage those spaces? These are just questions for you to ponder and for you to answer for yourself. You don't need to share any of these. The next one is, when or where do you feel that you're always right? This means you're stuck. Where do you think that you're always right, and what would it take for you to give that up? And then lastly, what's possible in your business, if you're able to generate agreements all the time, no matter what they had to say? Right, no matter what topic it is, you were able to generate agreements even if the client thought something completely different than you. That's we're getting there. We're doing some objection handling in a few weeks. That's coming too. All right, so there's two things we're going to take on today. The two in your handout, I'm going to do them out of order. So skip ahead two pages to where it says PACE examples. Let me take that back. It says PACEs, a.k.a. pacing statements. All right, a PACE is a thing. It's similar to the rapport game. Remember, if they speak a very quick pace, if they speak fast, we speak fast with them. We're pacing them. We're matching them. At races, at Indy cars, they have what's called a pace car. It's a car that goes around at a certain speed and sets the pace. And everybody goes the same speed as the pace car. They warm up the tires, and then the pace car gets out of the way, and everybody goes as fast as they can. So in this example, a pace, now what we're doing, instead of pacing their speed, their fast, their slow, their speed, now we're going to pace their truths for the client. So a pace here, by definition, is anything that we know to be true for the client. Now, it doesn't have to be true for you. It has to be true for the client. So if the client says, if you say, "Why? Tell me what's important about moving," and they say, "Oh, my God, we got to have a five-bedroom house," then it's fair to assume that for this client, it's important to have a five-bedroom house. A five-bedroom house is important. Now, that's true for this client. It's true for me. I don't want a five-bedroom house. It's true for that client. So a pace is anything that is so obviously true for your client that when you say it, the client unconsciously agrees. Whether they say it out loud or not doesn't matter, but the client must agree. Must agree. So, like what? Well, how about this? So right now, you and I are on the phone together. Uh-huh, yes we are. And this is week number 4 of The Truth About Sales. Now, whether you said it out loud or not, that little voice in your head went, uh-huh, mm-hmm, uh-huh. Right now, we're talking about paces. Mm-hmm, uh-huh. Well, you dialed into the conference line to listen to this call today. Uh-huh, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Most of you, I don't know if this is true for everybody in this line, but most of you sell real estate for a living. Mm-hmm. Most of you are realtors. Mm-hmm. One of you is an appraiser. One of you sells cardboard packaging. One of you owns a real estate franchise. So notice when I say these things, you have no choice but uh-huh, mm-hmm, uh-huh, uh-huh. What am I doing? I'm creating an agreement. So some examples of paces. Now remember, the pace is situationally true. It's not universal for everybody, but for that client. So some examples of paces might be, well, you said you need a five-bedroom house. Yes, yes, I said that. Mm-hmm. If they said that and you say it back, either you need a five-bedroom house or you told me you need a five-bedroom house, the client has no choice but to say, mm-hmm, uh-huh, mm-hmm. Wow, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, you told me your new job starts in 60 days. Mm-hmm, yes, it does, uh-huh. You told me that you owe $150,000 on this property. Uh-huh, yep, that's right, that's what we said. Wow, this house has a new roof, a new kitchen, and a new HVAC system. Uh-huh, yes, it does. Yep, uh-huh, you got that right. Basically, we're simply just repeating back to the client whatever the client gave us. Why would we do that? I mean, that seems so elementary and pedantic. Why would we do that? The client says, well, we need a five-bedroom house. We're going to say, great, you need a five-bedroom house. What? Doesn't that seem kind of silly? Well, maybe if we do it immediately like that, maybe. However, when we drip these back on the client, it does a couple of things. It demonstrates to the client that you were listening. It proves to the client that you heard them. And it has the client feel great because they know that you're on the same page. They know that you're looking out for their best interest because we're reframing. Mr. and Mrs. Seller, let me make sure I got this all right. You want to move to the beach. Uh-huh. You need to sell this house because you need the money to put down on that house. Mm-hmm. And you'd like to be there before June. Uh-huh. Ultimately, you'd like to live in Laguna Beach. Uh-huh. And if you can't quite swing Laguna Beach, you'd be open to Escondido or Costa Mesa. Uh-huh. That's right. Uh-huh. And currently, you think the house that you're in now is worth about $850. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And you owe about $250. Uh-huh. That's right. And you say on a scale of 1 to 10, your house is currently a 9, and the only thing that would make it a 10 would be just bust out the honey-do list and clean it and scrub it, and the house will be a 10. Uh-huh, that's right. What am I doing? All I'm doing is feeding back to the client the things that I know for sure are going to register a yes in the subconscious mind of my seller. Now, they might say yes out loud. Okay, I did that really slow to exaggerate. It might not be out loud at all. Right? I could say, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, let me make sure I have this right. You want to move to the beach. You owe about $250 on this house. It's worth about $850. You'd like to move to Laguna, and you'd like to be there by June. And they're just going to go, wow, you're a genius. Wow, you got all that. So a couple of things happen. The client's turned on that you listened. They no longer feel like they need to convince or control because it's clear that you got their back, that you're on their team. And we're setting up an unconscious agreement with the seller. Uh-huh, uh-huh, mm-hmm, uh-huh, yep, yep. All right, so a few examples. I'm going to let you create these. What kind of cases can you generate for an expired listing? What do you know for sure that when you repeat it back to an expired, that the expired person is going to say, uh-huh, mm-hmm, 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 uh-huh, yep, yep, uh-huh, mm-hmm. What do you know for sure that is a dead truth for an expired? Like what? Star 6, unmute, come in here, share a few. This is the participatory part. What can you say to an expired listing that will generate a guaranteed agreement?
This is David. The home didn't sell.
Yeah, the home didn't sell. Perfect. You could even take that a step further and say, I see your house is on the market for 6 months. Uh-huh. And it didn't sell. Uh-huh. Awesome, David. Thank you. Anybody else? For an expired, what else can we say to an expired that guaranteed an agreement?
You had to drop the price once.
Yeah, you reduced the price once, right? If you're looking at the MLS printout, you can say you started at $650 and you ended at $610 and it still didn't sell. Or over 6 months, you had two price reductions, it still didn't sell. Great. Right? This is all easy to get stuff. What else? Anything else for an expired that you know for sure? If you're looking at MLS and you have photos, you could say, you know, it's that blue house on the corner. Right? That sort of thing is helpful too. Okay, what about for a for sale by owner? What kind of a pace can you generate that will produce a guaranteed yes from a for sale by owner? Like what?
This is David again. You want to make the most money. You want to net the most money.
That's a universal one. That's the one that when I can't think of anything to say, I say that one, and it works 99% of the time, unless we're in that crazy short sale market. That almost always works no matter where you go. That's one of the aces I keep up my sleeve right there. When I'm stuck, when I don't know what to say, well, you want to make the most money possible. And they go, yes, yes, I do. Clearly you want to have high profit. Yes. Clearly you don't want to leave any money on the table. Bravo, David. That's the grand slam home run one right there. Keep that one in your pocket for sure. What else can we say? What else? How else could we pace a for sale by owner? What's the most obvious truth about a for sale by owner? You're attempting to sell on your own. You're doing it yourself.
You're not on the MLS. Well,
you're not. Oh, good one. You're not on the MLS. Good.
You have no offers yet.
Yeah, well, we don't know if they've had an offer or not.
Okay.
We could say you haven't closed the deal yet. You haven't gotten an acceptable offer yet. Something like that, yes. Maybe you haven't accepted an offer yet. It hasn't sold yet. You're still attempting to sell. Something like that, yes. Okay, how about when you're selling, when you have a buyer client, how can you pace your buyer client to generate a guaranteed agreement to a buyer? By the way, you guys should be writing all these down. What's true for sure, what's true about your buyer client? What do you know for sure that when you say it to them, they go, yeah, that's true, yep.
You want a great deal on a house?
You want a great deal on a house. Probably that's going to be true. Unless it's a zillionaire who says, I want the perfect house, I don't care what it costs, which is very, very rare. Probably that's going to be true. Okay, what was the other one? I heard two at the same time there. What was the other one?
You're looking for your next home.
Yeah, we're looking for your next home. Unless it's a rental, we're looking for an awesome rental. What else do you know for sure about your buyer client?
Oh, Jimmy, they need a 4-bedroom, 2-bath house.
Yeah, you told me. You told me you needed a 4-bedroom, 2-bath house. Or whatever they told you.
Yeah.
Right. You told me you want a 2,000 square foot house with a 4-car garage. Right. That's called a bachelor pad, by the way. 2,000 feet with a 4-car garage. How about for your buyer client, your mortgage broker, your pre-qual letter says you can buy anything you want up to, fill in the blank, $400,000. You told me you want to live south of the river. You told me you'd like to have a single-story home with a pool and a big yard. So the cheat sheet here, when in doubt, is you told me, blah, blah, blah. You said, blah, blah, blah. You shared with me, blah, blah, blah. And the perfect thing here is you're going to generate agreement. Yep, I did. Yes, I did. That's true. And once in a while, maybe you don't get it right, and they go, well, you know, I said single story, but I'd be open to a 2-story. Okay, good. So either you generated agreement or generated some clarification. And in order for you to be able to generate these, it forces you to have asked questions and listened to the answers. All right, let's do a couple more. How about for recruiting? Right, you're trying to pull somebody into your company. You're growing your team. You're growing your brokerage. You're getting a buyer's agent to join your team. What can you say that will generate a pace for a potential recruit?
This is David. You want to be successful.
David, man, you're doing the. Can you guys tell that David's done this before? So you want to be successful. You want to sell more this year than you did last year. You'd like to make more and work less, right? These are really universal. Pretty much everybody's going to agree to those. Nice job, David. How about with your family, your spouse, your kids? You guys said you wanted a family night once a week. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did. We committed to eat dinner together as a family 3 nights a week. Oh, yeah, we did say that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds awesome. Notice what we're doing is we're literally just repeating whatever they told us. One, it might clarify. More importantly, it's the easiest opportunity to generate, yeah, true, agreement, mm-hmm. Okay, any questions about that? We're going to do, over the next several weeks, we're going to use the structure of a PACE in about 6 different techniques. So it's very important that you get the concept of what is a PACE. It's literally a truism that you're repeating back to the client. Okay? And I've gone slow and kind of beat this to death on purpose. Any questions about what is a PACE, what qualifies, what doesn't qualify? Any questions at all? No? Jimmy, was that a question? I can hear Jimmy.
No, thank you.
Nope. Okay, no question. All right. Let's move on to technique number 2, which is actually in your handout, technique number 1. So go back a couple of pages. So technique number 1 for today, which is really 2 for today, is called the tie-down question. And if you study, you know, NLP, hypnosis, blah, 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 occasionally they call it a tag, T-A-G, tag question. Here I call it a tie-down question. What is a tie-down question? It's a short question placed at the end of a statement, and it's designed, again, to boost agreement. And these questions are oftentimes like rhetorical questions. They really do 2 very important functions. Function number 1 is they boost agreement. And in boosting agreement, they produce what's called an implied yes, an implied yes. For example, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, you definitely want me to get you the most money possible for the house, right? Now, the tie-down question there is simply right. Or you definitely want me to get you the most money possible for the house, don't you? I go, yeah, of course we do. Now, the tie-down question there was right or don't you or whatever. And the client says, yes, of course we want that. Now, listen to the question again. You definitely want me to get you the most money possible for the house, don't you? And they go, yeah, of course we do. So did they say yes to the most money possible, or did they say yes to wanting you to do it for them? So that's called an implied yes. So they're really saying yes to I want the most money possible, yet subliminally they're also saying yes, they want you to do it. So that's one of the benefits of a tie-down question. The other benefit is, and you'll see this in coming weeks, it keeps the client involved. One of the issues that most salespeople have, in fact, this is exactly what Doug shared earlier today in the call, is when we get excited, we tend to talk too much. And we talk and talk and talk, and let me tell you, let me convince you, let me explain to you, this is amazing, and oh my gosh, it's so good, it slices, it dices, how much you think this is worth, but wait, don't answer now, it comes with steak knives, right? So I know none of you are doing that, yet I'm making fun of that model. Most of us get excited and tend to over-talk. And this tool, the tie-down question, forces us to come back to the client, to keep the client involved. Does that make sense? Uh-huh. Isn't that great? Uh-huh. So if we get you to Laguna in time to be there for June, you can be running on the beach and spending the summer on the beach. That's what you want, right? Yes, yeah, that's exactly what I want. Wouldn't that be great? Yeah, that would be amazing. So these little tie-down questions, there's a big list of them on your handout. Does that make sense? Won't that be great? Don't you think? Is this okay? All right, does that work for you? Don't you agree? Shouldn't you? Shouldn't we? Whatever. right? Notice they're just a couple of words, short, and they're all designed to be to boost some agreement. Now, one quick caveat about this. Notice most of these, the answer is going to be yes. Does that make sense? Isn't that great? Don't you want that? Isn't that amazing? Yes, 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 yes. Right? As much yes as I can possibly generate. And consider that my tie down could also be a negative, meaning I could say something like, you don't want to leave a bunch of profit on the table, do you? And the client's saying, no, no, I don't want that. And I'm saying, no, you don't want that at all. That's going to be terrible. And they're saying, uh-uh. So notice we're both saying no together, meaning we are still in agreement. No is okay if we're both on the same page. All right, let me rip through a few of these examples for you. I'm going to go really fast, and then we're going to create something cool, and I'm going to give you a little bonus that's not in the handout that'll make this all come together for you. So example number one, we did this one already. You definitely want me to get you the most money possible for the house, right? And they go, yeah, of course we do. Great. Just imply that they're hiring you. Now, example number two is the negative example I just did. Funny, I just did that by memory, and it's the same one that's on the handout. You don't want to leave any profit on the table, do you? And they go, no. And I'm saying, no, we don't want to do that. Number three, you're committed to grow your business, aren't you? Well, yes, yes, I am. Notice I'm implying that growing their business is significant for them. And because of who I'm speaking to, of course, they're a business person. Of course, they're going to say yes. Next one says, when you take out the garbage, the kitchen will smell so much better. Won't that be great? Yeah, because it's terrible in here. Let me take that out right now. So notice, won't that be great? Don't you agree? Isn't that wonderful? The whole idea here is to get, yep. As much agreement as we can generate. By the way, you know, the more that you exercise your rights, the more that we'll be securing those rights for generations to come. Isn't that what you want for your children? Yes, yes, I do. And the last example is self-talk. Me talking to myself, you talking to yourself, whatever. Every time I pick up the phone, I'm moving one step closer to my goals. Isn't that exciting? All right. A very powerful way to practice this particular technique is with another person. And you practice and play what we call the tie-down game. So that might be something like, wow, this training class I'm doing is very powerful, isn't it? Yes, I'm enjoying it too, aren't you? Yes, I'm getting so much out of this. Isn't this exciting? And just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and keep tying it down, tying it down, tying it down, just as an exercise. Remember, there's no perfect solution. There's just really good habits. As you practice and build this habit, it will become a reflex for you as you're speaking to people to say things like, well, would that work for you? Great. Isn't that wonderful? Perfect. That's what you want, right? And just keep enrolling the client. Keep the client involved. Remember, one of our downfalls, most of us, myself included, one of our downfalls is we talk too much and we make the sale about us. Let me tell you. Let me convince you. Let me show you. The sale isn't about us, it's about the customer. It's about the client, the prospect, or whatever. So I want, in my perfect world, I want the client to do most of the talking. And I want to be the one asking the really good questions. I'm going to ask a question, where do you want to move to? And they go, I want to move to Colorado. Great, what's important about Colorado? Well, I like this and that. Great, and what would it, remember, call number one, what would it do for you if you had these things, right? So once I get the answers, then it's really easy for me to say, all right, let me get this straight. You want to move to Colorado? Uh-huh. In a perfect world, you'd like to be in Denver or maybe Boulder? Uh-huh. And you'd like to be there in time to do the mountain bike championships in the summertime? Yeah, that's right. right? So I'm just literally pacing back what I got from them and then occasionally saying, boy, that would be really great for you, wouldn't it? Boy, this is really, we're getting close to this, aren't we? Boy, can you feel this is becoming a reality, right? And just keep enrolling them, involving them, keeping them included. All right. I have one more trick up my sleeve for you. Any questions about the tie-down question first? Any thoughts, any questions, any anything about that? All right. Let's do the magic combination. So here's the practice. Here is what I recommend that you take on as your home play exercise for this week. So when I say dog ear 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes a day, this is what I recommend that you do in those 20 minutes. That you literally, hold on, I have to cough. Excuse me. You literally write sentences, meaning that, and I think you should be able to knock out 10 of these a day, maybe 15 or 20 of these a day. You're going to type them really quickly. And the sentence that I'm recommending that you write is a pacing statement, then a tie-down question together. Pace, tie-down, pace, tie-down, pace, tie-down, pace, tie-down. Is this the end-all, be-all? No. This is a wax-on, wax-off. This is a muscle that we're building. We're going to start building more upon this in coming weeks. This is a new habit for you to set. So it's going to sound something like this. As you're, this is the kind of sentences that you're going to write for your homework, for your home play. It's going to sound like this. You said you wanted to move to Colorado, right? You told me you wanted to be there by June, didn't you? Let's see. If you move in June, you won't have to move in the snow. Does that make sense? When you get pre-qualified first, before shopping for a house, you can avoid some disappointments. Does that sound like a good idea? Your lender says you can buy anything you want up to $650. Are you comfortable there? It's okay if they say no. No, I'm not comfortable there. Okay, well, let's look at the payments. Where are you comfortable? Let's get that figured out up front. Okay, how about for recruiting? All right, you told me you've been selling real estate for 5 years. You did 12 sides last year. You're averaging one a month. Did I get that right? Yeah, you got that right. And you told me that if you had any sort of constant supply of leads, you feel you could close two or three times as many. Is that still true? Yeah, that's true. Okay, so this is the practice. Now, how do you know what the paces are? Well, some of them are obvious. You know, your house is on the market 6 months and it didn't sell. I see you had two price reductions and it expired this morning. Right, those are easy. The other ones, real ones, personal ones, you have to talk to people. You have to ask them questions. Once you ask them questions and you know what's going on and how things work, then it's much easier to use personalized cases. You told me you want to expand your real estate portfolio. Uh-huh. You currently have 10 rental doors. That's correct. And you told me that you're concerned that the market's going to turn. Do you still feel that way? Yes, I still feel that way. Okay, so instead of these big giant properties that are subject to market fluctuations, what if you had smaller properties that were easier to rent? Would that be a positive for you? Yeah, that'd be great. So can you guys feel the, can you feel the rhythm and feel the way that this is engaging? Notice I have one of the goals of operating with using paces. One of the goals is to keep my opinion off the table. My opinion's only good for me. Typically not good for anybody other than me. So by using a PACE, what's true for the client, it keeps my opinion out of here. Oh, my God, this is the most beautiful house on the street. That's my opinion. They might hate it. I got a very rude awakening a couple of years ago. I went on a listing appointment, and the owner of the house had just, in a nice neighborhood, really, really nice neighborhood, the owner of the house had just gutted the house and remodeled everything, like new kitchen, new bathrooms, and he did an unbelievable job. I mean, I'm not kidding. I've been looking at real estate for 15 years. This kitchen literally took my breath away. It looked like it should have been on the cover of some magazine. It was spectacular. I couldn't have designed a better kitchen myself. And I walked in, and he's like, well, come on, let me show you around. Here's the this, and here's that, and here's the kitchen. And I was like, holy smokes. This kitchen is spectacular. And, like, I authentically meant it. Like, holy crap, I have a really nice kitchen. And I saw this kitchen, and I was like, holy God, are you kidding me? Look at this kitchen. And so that was my authentic opinion. And I meant it complimentary. And the client said, yeah, we thought about holding this little thing as a rental, but we're just going to sell this thing. You know, I'm just going to flip it. And right, for him, it was just a little project house that he had flipped. So notice, my authentic opinion got in the way, even though it was meant as a compliment. So that's the beauty about using a PACE. Great, you said you want to sell this house. That's right. You told me that you bought it 3 months ago, 6 months ago, and you spent the last 6 months fixing and flipping and redoing it. Correct. Great. Is there anything that didn't get done? Nope, it's all done. Great. So you're ready, theoretically, you're ready to put it on the market now. Is that true? Yeah, that's true. I'm ready. PACE, tie down. PACE, tie down. PACE, tie down. PACE, tie down. All right, we just got 5 minutes, 6 minutes left. Questions, comments, examples, ahas, anything.
Alexis here, I have a question.
Please.
What do you do when you're working with someone that you just cannot get into agreement with, and someone that just seems pretty committed to being disgruntled or contradictory?
I agree with them being disgruntled. So give me an example, or could you role play that, or give us something more to go on?
Well, the situation I was recently working with a friend who is in a legal battle over a house that they have listed, and her ex-husband is he got to pick the listing agent that she's not happy with. So since she doesn't trust her ex-husband, she doesn't trust this listing agent, and I was trying to explain to her that, you know, she's actually really seems like she's doing some good work for you, and I agree with all of the points that she's made, and she just kind of came back into this.
You didn't take your friend's side.
Right.
Yeah, you didn't take your friend's side. So your friend said, forgive me, I'm just going to make this up and paraphrase. Your friend said something like, this listing agent's not good, and they're screwing this all up, and they're wrong, and I don't like this agent, and I want a different listing agent. Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you disagreed.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, well, I think that agent did this right, and the agent did that right, and it appears that the agent is doing these other things right. Of course they're going to disagree with you.
Mm-hmm.
They're in a not good position. They're going through a divorce. They're not in control of choosing the agent. All right? This person is behind the eight ball for sure. And so what that person most likely needed was for you to take their side and start by saying, we did a little bit of this last week, start by saying, man, I totally get how you're feeling kind of cut out of the loop on this deal. Boy, that's awful. That not only are you having to go through a divorce, but now you don't even get to pick, you know, you're not even in charge of running the selling the house. You didn't even get a voice, and you didn't like this agent, and they chose him anyways. boy, that must be a horrible place for you to be in.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do that part first.
Yeah, I actually did. So
still didn't work.
It was frustrating because I'm super empathetic to what this person is going through. And, you know, I tried to convey that sense of compassion and understanding and unfairness. But it just kept coming back to this kind of roadblock with the communication between us.
Well, could you enroll them with questions instead? Like, wow, that really stinks that you're stuck with a bad agent. Ugh. And you're in a contract with a bad agent. Ugh, even worse. So I'm curious, what do you think this agent's doing so horribly? What should they be doing? What are they doing wrong? Are you stuck for the full 6 months? Is there an out clause? Like, notice I'm not really taking a position yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just exploring.
Okay.
So I think the place where you generated some more resistance from your friend was that your friend had a hurt position. Wow, I'm getting shortchanged over here. And in a really nice way, basically you said, well, I'm sorry that you feel that way, but I disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, wow, it really looks like you're being shortchanged. What's happening? What do you think they should be doing? Do you have any options? Is there anything you can do? Right? And just explore it a little bit without having my opinion clouded up. Because
mm-hmm.
What hurt your friend's feelings was that you just didn't take their side, even though you said, oh, God, I'm so sorry. That's so horrible. And you're wrong.
Right.
Yeah. Helpful?
Yes. Thank you.
Awesome. You're welcome. Isn't it interesting how Alexis is somebody that I know. I've known her for many, 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 many years, and I know her as somebody who's very intelligent and very tuned in and a great listener, and she's really an extraordinary person. And yet in the middle of this, she's trying to do the best that she can for her friend and telling the truth. Well, you know, I'm a real estate broker. I know how these things work. It looks like that agent did the right thing, right? She's trying to smooth it over. But the piece that she missed was when somebody's upset and you make them wrong, they get more upset. This is the whole right-wrong dichotomy. And who's to say who's right and who's wrong? Right? Right and wrong is a perspective. We're going to do a bunch more of that coming up in a couple of weeks. Much more right-wrong dichotomy and perspective. Anybody else? We just got a minute or two left. Questions, comments, ahas, breakthroughs, anything at all while we're here. So in the world of sales, I trust that you have all heard the quote, the saying, that great salespeople assume the sale. I'm going to assume that who I talk to is going to work with me. I assume that who I talk to wants to work with me. I'm going to assume that when I sit down and we sit at the kitchen table and look at the house and look at the comparables, I'm going to assume that we're going to work together, that they're going to sign a contract with me. I'm going to move forward as if, of course, it's going to work out. There's the structure of assumption. And assumption has a structure, and that happens to be our topic for next week. At what levels can we assume without offending? How do we assume things are going to work without being too presumptive and ticking somebody off? So that's our topic for next week. So with that, we are top of the hour. So thank you all for being here. I hope this has made an impact in your world today. And as always, practice, practice, practice these techniques. There's no magic script. There's just great tools and great habits. Right? If somebody tried to attack Bruce Lee in a dark alley, he didn't say, wait a minute, I'm going to use this one and then that one. No, he would just have habits. He would just move. Same thing here. Practice, practice, practice. Before you know it, you'll just be responding and moving organically as you build these habits better and better. All right, everybody. That's it. Thank you so much for being here. You guys rock.